The first gubernatorial candidate KSFR spoke with was Alan Weber. Mr. Weber, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you are running for governor of New Mexico?
I'm running for governor of New Mexico for a very simple reason. I love this state. I will be living the rest of my life in this state, and I am very worried about the state under Governor Martinez. We are number 50 in overall child well-being, number 50 in job growth. We have zero population growth. We have more young people leaving than people coming, and I think that's unacceptable. We can do better, and I would like to have the chance as governor to make the state's future brighter than it is today. My background is primarily as a businessman and an entrepreneur. I lived in Boston for about 23 years working at the Harvard Business School. I ran the Harvard Business Review and then started my own magazine, a magazine called Fast Company. It was the fastest growing, most successful business magazine in the history of the United States. And it was all about entrepreneurship, growing the economy, finding jobs, helping people create their own careers. And in 2003, my wife Frances and I came to Santa Fe, bought a house, and we're staying put.
Given the economic realities of the state and the country right now, what parts of the budget would you increase or cut in order to realize your priorities for the state?
Right. Well, I think, you know, when you think about New Mexico's strengths and its needs, the greatest thing that I believe we need to focus on is two things. One is jobs and the other is education. So I'm a very strong advocate for early childhood education, for opening some of the permanent fund and investing in New Mexico's children. There's a speech I gave last June to Voices for Children. It's on the campaign website, alanfornm.com, making the case for why we need to really focus on our children's well-being. We can pay for that using permanent fund dollars. We should also open other resources if we need them. For example, I favor a surtax on the wealthiest New Mexicans and putting that money into education as well, making the tax code more progressive. I think we need to recognize that education and jobs are two sides of the same coin. So as we invest in education, we prepare our young people to hold the jobs we're going to try to create in my administration. And there we've got a lot of opportunities. We have perhaps the greatest chance to be the most renewable, sustainable economy in the United States, tapping into renewable energy, water management and water conservation, solar energy, wind, geothermal. These are really waiting for a governor with vision and with experience to create as the New Mexico economy. Of course, as you grow the economy, you generate more revenue for the state. And so it becomes a growing pie that we can use to reinvest in the things we care the most about. One other thing we ought to be aware of, and that is the way that we use tax incentives. We need much more transparency in the way we use tax incentives to try to bring companies into New Mexico. The governor recently vetoed a budget that would identify the tax expenditures that we make as a state. So we really don't have a good accounting on how we use our tax expenditures, our tax incentives, to try to create jobs and what we get in return. We don't really know what the return on investment looks like. My background as a businessman tells me we need to know those numbers. We need to analyze them. Citizens should know whether their tax dollars are really creating new jobs or simply going into the pockets of large out-of-state corporations.
Let's talk about jobs and the importance of the private sector in growing this economy. How would you fault the current governor for courting businesses in New Mexico, and what would you do differently?
I think that's right. Her strategy, which I heard her announce at a day-long session on New Mexico's economic future about 18 months ago, I think is trickle-down Republican economics. She said she was in favor of cutting taxes on out-of-state corporations, reducing environmental regulations, and paving more roads. And that sounds to me like something out of the 1950s. It didn't work then, it doesn't fit New Mexico now, and it's not our future. I think our future is actually much more interesting and engaging, and I'm very optimistic about it. We have not one economy in New Mexico. We have about 10. We have an economy based on the small and medium-sized agile companies that are here right now. We should not be growing our economy from the outside in, but from the grassroots up. We should be leveraging our strengths, which are renewable energy resources. If we tap solar energy, geothermal, wind, we not only become more sustainable, we preserve the environment, and we create lots of good jobs. Look at the issue of film and entertainment. When the governor came into office, we were number one in the film and entertainment business in the country among states. Today, we've dropped to about 22 or 23, simply because she kneecapped the incentive program and then sent out a letter to her supporters saying, "I guess I sure taught those Hollywood liberals a lesson." She didn't teach Hollywood liberals a lesson. She taught New Mexicans a lesson, and the lesson was she didn't really care about the communities around New Mexico that really need the film industry and the entertainment industry to have good jobs for their people. And these are jobs that go beyond just being an actor. They're jobs driving trucks, doing the electrical work, building the sets, catering, having rooms for the people to stay in. It's a broad-based benefit to have the film and entertainment industry in New Mexico. Think about farm and agriculture. That's a huge opportunity. Growing food today that's healthy, local, and organic is not only good business, it's good health. We have the opportunity to do that in New Mexico and to make that one of our calling cards. Tourism. We should be much more creative when it comes to tourism. We really don't take advantage of the history, culture, the things that make New Mexico remarkable, the diversity. This is a state that should be marketing itself not only to our own people, but to people all over the country and all over the world. And we can do that in creative ways. I've said on the campaign trail, we need to move from maps to apps. We should have young people doing app development the same way Mayor Bloomberg did when he was mayor of New York. Let's host hackathons where young people compete to see who can come up with the coolest app to make New Mexico's tourism department much more inviting, fun, and engaging for young people who come into this state to try out food, culture, history, sample our bed and breakfasts, go fishing, go to our amazing pueblos, engage with the diversity that is New Mexico using apps that you download onto your smartphone. That's the future. And New Mexico could be the coolest place when it comes to tourism. Finally, the one that I'm most excited about is the future of entrepreneurship in New Mexico. We have the labs. We've got strong programs in our universities. We have lots of really well-educated scientists, technologists, people who know that the future is in biotech, nanotech, dealing with water as an opportunity rather than a problem, coming up with great water management technology so that we are the most advanced state in the country when it comes to really coming to terms with global warming. That's a great opportunity. Young people today want to be entrepreneurs of their own lives. We need a governor who understands entrepreneurship, celebrates entrepreneurship, and makes New Mexico the next place to be an entrepreneur rather than Colorado, which today has 4 out of the top 10 cities for entrepreneurship. It's going to be too expensive in Colorado soon. We should be the place where entrepreneurs come to start businesses.
So you mentioned water, which is obviously one of the most important resources here in New Mexico and a factor that could cause considerable conflict down the road. We also have one of our biggest industries, oil and gas, which is feeding New Mexico's economy. How do you plan to balance these two interests?
Well, I think we have all seen the future, and we know that in the Southwest in general and New Mexico in particular, we're dealing with a new normal. Water isn't, we're not going to suddenly tap into new sources of water. This is our water budget. And so I've said all along, we have to both do a much better job of taking care of the water that we have, which means things like treating the Kirtland Air Force Base spill as a priority, rather than watch that so-called plume gradually creep toward the water resources of Albuquerque. And then we have to be very wise about how we treat water going forward. We need a water budget that we live within. And that requires conservation, that requires incentives for people to use water in ways that make sense, water technology so that we get more out of the water we've got, and a water mapping system to treat it as a resource where we have the most knowledge, the most information, and the best way of tracking our water use so we plan more effectively. We need to take a hard look at the way coal plants, for example, use water. When we start switching from coal plants to renewable energy, solar, wind, geothermal, we are using our water more intelligently and creating jobs and having renewable energy. So there are ways to have strategies that think about connecting the dots in ways that help us deal with our water issue, deal with our job issue, and create a sustainable economy going forward.
Now, there are a lot of other issues that impact the state here. One of the most notable recently has been around police brutality. This certainly is nationwide. This is not specific here. Do you agree this is a problem in Albuquerque? And how would you think about addressing some of these problems?
Well, we know it's a problem. We know it's a severe problem, and we know it's a cultural problem in terms of the police department and the way police officers are trained and what they are told their mission and their internal culture ought to be. And when the Department of Justice intervenes and comes in from outside and issues a report that everyone agreed was a scathing indictment of the operation in Albuquerque, I don't think we can quibble anymore about whether or not we have a serious issue in the way policing is done. And I think it's not just in Albuquerque. I think we have to be honest that the way the state police have conducted their business in some cases is equally hard to accept. I think it is a cultural issue, and it has to do with the mission we give the police officers, how we define their job, and how we train them. Now, we have somebody currently in the position of training of state police and other police officers who was quoted in the paper as saying that, and these are not my words, these are his words, evil is in New Mexico. Now, if you believe that the job of the police is to go after evil, you will have a police force that believes their first instinct ought to be to draw their guns and shoot their weapons, as opposed to what I believe is the real culture, which is the job of the police is to protect and serve. They should go into situations, particularly situations that are really difficult, dealing with people who are mentally ill or dealing with symptoms of mental illness, or home domestic disputes, which is where police officers are often called to intervene. And rather than escalating the situation, the training ought to be to de-escalate the situation, to be, in effect, really sensitive problem solvers who happen to carry guns. And we really need to emphasize that in the way we train police officers. I am the first one to respect the way our police officers put themselves into harm's way. And back in my earlier career, 40 years ago, when I worked in the mayor's office in Portland, Oregon, the police department reported to us. And we really had to work with the chief of police, the police union, all of the officers to talk about the culture of problem solving that we wanted to have in Portland. I understand how hard it is to be a police officer from that. Cops really do have tough jobs. They're under stress. Their lives are at risk. That said, with proper training, police officers know when to step up and use their most forceful presence and when to step back and de-escalate a situation because you're dealing with people who are really in a dangerous place in their own minds and in their own emotional condition. So that's about training, that's about culture, that's about community norms, it's about having a police force that reflects the diversity of the people who are being policed so that you don't have folks who believe that the police officers are going to intimidate them, you don't have racial profiling. All of this is very sensitive, but it comes down to leadership and setting standards and then holding people accountable when they don't live up to those standards.
And speaking of holding people accountable, a lot of the candidates here have all taken turns taking swipes at Susana Martinez. I'm wondering how you differentiate yourself from the other candidates.
Well, I think if you look at what differentiates us, it's a function of experience, background, and vision. I'm the only candidate in the race who has actually worked as an entrepreneur and as a business person. For the last 30 years, first at the Harvard Business School and then in my own magazine, I have been working hard at understanding what it takes to get an economy moving, how to build good companies that are really not only profit-making but socially responsible. I am the only candidate in this race who has signed both sides of a paycheck. And that makes a big difference in a state where we are lagging the rest of the country in jobs. I also come at the problems of state government with an innovative mind. I'm not a full-time, long-term politician. I've never run for office before, although I have worked in federal, state, and local government. But I've never been a candidate before. And I think that gives me a fresh pair of eyes and a fresh way of looking at problems. I don't have higher political ambitions. I don't want to be governor and then go run for vice president or senator. My only goal is to serve as governor and to make a contribution to the state of New Mexico. I think that's a big difference. And finally, I think one of the other big differences is I fundamentally believe I'm the only Democrat who can defeat Susana Martinez in November. And that's because we look at how she's run her office. She's essentially been campaigning since the day she got elected. She's been running for higher office from day one, looking for support from the Koch brothers and the Tea Party to have a career in Washington, D.C. Well, that's not only bad for New Mexico, that makes her a national candidate with national backing. She's raising money all over the United States. We need, on the Democratic side, a candidate who can raise money and bring resources into New Mexico as a Democrat to be on equal footing with her campaign. In the last 6 months, I've raised more than $200,000 outside New Mexico. I've gotten contributions from former Governor Dukakis, contributions from former Governor Jim Blanchard of Michigan, contribution from former Ohio Governor Dick Celeste. I've gotten money from coast to coast, from people who aren't looking for contracts with me as governor, but people who have worked with me who believe that my vision, my skills, my background would make me a great governor, and they want to stop the Koch brothers in New Mexico. They want to draw a line and say, you're not going to take over New Mexico the way you've done in other states. And so I believe we have to fundamentally nationalize this election on the Democratic side the way Susana Martinez has nationalized it on the Republican side. That's money, that's resources, that's endorsements, and that's experience outside New Mexico as well as inside New Mexico. I've also outraised the other candidates on the Democratic side inside New Mexico. That is how politics works today. I wish it weren't. I wish it wasn't about money. I wish it was purely about engaging with voters on the issues that are of most concern to them. But it turns out we live in a country where, while politics aren't about money, it takes money to do what politics really are about. And that's part of the game.
Now, it seems of all the candidates, Susana Martinez has taken swipes at you more than anyone else, and specifically targeting some of your alliances. Can you discuss that a little?
Absolutely. Well, I think what we know is that as soon as I announced I was running for governor, a couple of interesting things happened. Number one, I got phone calls from Republican businessmen saying that if I were the candidate in November, they'd be backing me, simply because they respect my background as a business person and an entrepreneur. The second thing that happened was the governor's team started digging up stuff from 40 years ago and using that to try to smear my candidacy. One example that I think is it's funny as much as it is sad. 40 years ago when I was working in Portland, Oregon, I wrote a memo called Disincentives to the Automobile. It came out of a book that some people may have read if they're urban planning fans called The Death and Life of Great American Cities by Jane Jacobs. It is a handbook for understanding how to create great cities. My job, given to me by the mayor, was to do a policy memo on all the ways that it would be beneficial to Portland and Portland neighborhoods to invest in transit rather than enabling automobiles to drive through city neighborhoods and build freeways. Susana's team dug up a 40-year-old memo and day one of my campaign issued a Twitter release that said, Alan Weber wants to take away your automobile. So, you know, you can expect certain hyperbole in politics today, but I think that that's a bridge too far. In the spirit of Chris Christie, that's a bridge that we ought to close. And it's happened over and over again. I think the simple reason that she's gone after me like that is that she knows I'm the one person who can beat her. I think that the Martinez political machine looks at the other candidates who I respect and have gotten to like and work with on the campaign trail, but they know their weaknesses. They know their vulnerabilities. They know their political history. And they know they can't raise the money to challenge them. And so the Republicans want to keep me out of the general election and are dabbling in the Democratic primary to try to pick the person they'd like to run against. I think the hard truth is that too many people have bought into the myth that Susana Martinez cannot be defeated. We all know that anybody can be defeated. We all know that circumstances arise that suddenly change an election days before the vote is actually held. So I don't know how anybody would presume to know what the outcome will be in November without working hard, trying hard, and getting involved. But that said, I think we've been subjected to a steady drumbeat of stories from the national press to local newspapers that say Susana Martinez has too much money, too much support from the Koch brothers, too much name familiarity. She hasn't made enough mistakes or done enough wrong for people to vote her out of office. Well, now we're seeing things change that story. We're seeing articles come up in Mother Jones. We're hearing tape recordings where Susana's own voice betrays her real views about New Mexico, about New Mexico's teachers. She says in public, "I'm so pro-teacher, it isn't funny." And in private, she says, "Why should we give them a raise? They take 2.5 months off." She lets one of her high-level staff members say really horrible things about former Speaker Lujan and doesn't rebuke that individual or take any responsibility for those comments. When people learn what really goes on behind closed doors in the Martinez administration, I think we know she's beatable. And so people shouldn't presume to know the outcome of an election that hasn't been held yet. And frankly, I think the greatest test of New Mexico's future is our capacity to create it ourselves, to get involved, and to give our voice and our energy to making the state the kind of place we want it to be. You do that by participating. That's the fundamental principle of democracy. So don't give away your vote. Don't give away your voice. Don't give up before you try. Pitch in, make a difference, see if we can win the election and change the trajectory of New Mexico's future.
Is there anything else you would like KSFR listeners to know about you, your campaign, or any plans you have if you were elected governor of New Mexico?
Well, I think the first thing I would say, we probably should have started with this because I think it's fundamental. This election is of incredible importance to the state of New Mexico. This is one of those pivotal moments where our future for the next 20 years could well be decided by the election. And yet I've heard too many Democrats and too many New Mexicans say they are going to, quote unquote, sit this one out. Nobody should sit this one out. If you sit this one out, you in effect are practicing voter suppression on yourself. You don't have to vote for me, but get involved. Get engaged. Find a candidate you support and give that person your energy, your time, your support, your passion, your voice, your money. It's really important. This election is critical. I fundamentally believe that 4 more years of Susana Martinez will make our future so difficult, we will be so far behind, we will be really playing catch up for a long time. I also think that we do need a governor who recognizes that part of the job of the governor is to be, in effect, the CEO of the state, to have a great cabinet, a cabinet that is qualified, that understands New Mexico, that represents the diversity of New Mexico, and also the chief marketing officer of the state. We need a governor who tells the stories about New Mexico's greatness and celebrates our schools that are working, our teachers who are heroic, our students who are rising above difficult circumstances, who talks about our entrepreneurs, talks about the history of New Mexico, and in you know, in a land of enchantment, lets New Mexico citizens be enchanted about our own state. That's critical. And finally, I would say, I've said from the beginning of my campaign, we have so much to be optimistic about, we ought to be celebrating our future. The future of New Mexico is hiding in plain sight. We have entrepreneurs, we have natural resources, we've got great schools that we don't talk about. We have unlimited potential. Whenever I look at New Mexico, I see possibilities waiting to be realized. That's the governor's job, is to make what is possible real. And I would work at that full-time, starting day one of my administration, and listen to the concerns of New Mexicans and make that an agenda for my administration. Be a good listener, be a good collaborator, and build the state's future working together.
Thank you, Alan Weber, for speaking with KSFR today.